A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. Now, the first thing I have to confess, that given that this is a podcast today about internet dating, is that I have never, ever in my life once swiped right or swiped left or ever been on a dating app. And I'm not boasting about that. I'm just telling you how old I am and also how I've just been in long-term serial monogamy relationships, the current one having gone on for around 22 years. So I haven't had the need for the apps. I'm sure I'd be on them like a hot snot if I did need them. But anyway, we're talking about the minefield of dating apps today. And we're going to be talking, thankfully, with a guest who is someone who knows an awful lot more than me about navigating these spaces as a heterosexual woman these days.
Yeah, so there's kind of like a few different genres of married man on dating apps. One is the guy who will be like, think it's like sexy, like think it's like, yeah, like let's meet for some no strings fun. And it's like, that's not sexy, dude. If you're not having fun with your wife, why would I want to, not that I would want to have fun if you were having fun with your wife, but you know what I mean? And then there's another type of guy who will just be like, you know, don't judge me in a sexless, loveless marriage. It's usually sexless, actually. I don't think they care about the love bit. you know, just looking to get my needs met, but I'm staying for the kids. It's like, oh my God, what a hero. Like, oh my God, well done, mate. Like, oh, do you know what? What a good guy that you're, you know, just trying to cheat on your wife on dating apps because of the kids, for the kids.
That was the voice there of Aileen Barrett, who has written a book that she calls A Dictionary of Douchebaggery for the Modern Dater. She is the Tinder translator, and it's a hilariously sharp read from the woman behind the Instagram page at Tinder Translators. So, 10 years after the introduction of Tinder, dating apps, as you know, have changed the terrain of human interaction. But many people feel like they've just been sent into the wilderness without a guide. And for those dating heterosexual men, especially, the blatant misogyny encountered during every swipe session is depressing and enraging in equal measure. And then there is the not so blatant stuff. Scrolling through profile after profile, you'll see the same stock phrases: good vibes only, must have banter, no drama, just ask. But what do they actually mean? Well, Aileen Barrett, as I said, is the Tinder translator, and she, in this book, takes you through an A to Z of terminology that permeates not just the dating world, but the wider world. It is part reference, part rant, and part rallying cry for anyone navigating the sometimes gross and exhausting experience of dating. But it's also for everyone who is sick of the patriarchy, whatever their relationship status. Aileen's marriage broke down and she found herself out on the dating scene again and swore that she would never go on the apps. But as inevitably happens, she found herself back there and kind of appalled at what she found. So the Tinder translator idea came from wanting to decode what men, and a lot of the time there's this misogyny going on, what men are saying on the apps. And in doing that, she has created a whole community, and the result is this book. I began by asking Aileen why she decided to start translating Tinder bios in the first place.
I was on dating apps, Tinder and Bumble and all the rest of it, tried a few of them for about 3.5 years on and off, which I think most people are on and off in one way or another, either dating and then going back or deleting them out of like boredom or frustration. And then going back again. I was married until the summer of 2016. I was in a relationship for 9.5 years. So in that time, dating apps had become a thing. Tinder came out, I think, in 2012. And sort of by the time it was 2016 was kind of the way people were dating now, which had not been the case when I was dating before. And so I decided to get on them probably ill-advisedly short time after I was separated. And just the experiences I had kind of made me, well, want to make fun of some of the stuff that was happening, really. So I decided to start this page where I translate Tinder bios. So I take a bio and I kind of then change it into what the subtext really means, or, you know, one interpretation of what the subtext really means.
But was it very quite quickly that you realized, God, there's a lot of repetition here in the things that guys are saying in their bios, and that it became very clear very quickly that there was almost a language used in these bios that would give signals to women and should make women run away for certain cases?
Yeah, I think it definitely doesn't take long for anyone on dating apps. I think regardless of gender, actually, there's a lot of kind of repeated phrases. I mean, it's kind of like harping back to the Lonely Hearts columns of yesteryear, you know, like good sense of humor and all those things. But some of them are gendered and are kind of more have a sort of darker or maybe a more red flaggy meaning behind them. And it doesn't take long at all because it's so repetitive, to the extent that I don't understand why anyone puts these phrases in their bio, because everyone's got them. But yeah, it doesn't take you long to notice that A, it's quite like dully repetitive, but also B, there's just like the levels of open misogyny are just quite shocking, really.
Yeah, because your book is subtitled An A to Z of Modern Misogyny, and we're going to go through some of them soon. But I think that just be interested in your initial impressions and observations when you first went onto the dating apps. I mean, you started to see that online men were much more willing to talk to you like an object or to belittle you than perhaps they would in real life. That's just so depressing. That, I mean, I'm not surprised, but I was a bit surprised by some of your book, because it seems like men on dating apps, or some men, not all, hashtag not all men, as you say at the beginning of the book, behave in a completely different way than they would if they met someone in a bar.
Yeah, I think it's like anything online, and I talk about this briefly in the book, that, you know, it's like social media. It's like people on Twitter who are foul to each other in ways that they would never be to each other's face. And then you've got the kind of anonymous, you know, pictureless people on Twitter who are even more foul. And you kind of get that a bit in dating apps. But with dating apps, it's almost a step further removed, because the only person who's seeing what you write is the person you're talking to. So, well, obviously there's your bio, but once you're in a conversation, you know, if you send sexual messages within five exchanges of pleasantries, then the only person who's seeing it is the person that you are sending those to. So there's a kind of another level of anonymity that you can kind of maybe like get away with things that you wouldn't if more people were present.
So are you saying then as well, like you do say in the book, that things can turn sexual very, very quickly, much more quickly than they would in real life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's when I make that joke of like, oh, you know, it's usually men who message and start talking about sex within 10 messages. People are like, 10? That's a lot, you know, because sometimes, you know, it'd be the first thing that's said to you. And it's the objectification thing. And again, it's easier to objectify someone who isn't in front of you as a human. They're a picture. And, you know, whatever context you're in your home, just sort of, you know, sitting there scrolling. So, yeah, no, it can be very quick. Obviously, you know, like you said, it's not everyone, but it's an astounding proportion of the men you talk to will turn anything you say sexual as well. Like, it, you know, they'll just go, just really be like, oh, I'll be like, I'm eating dinner. They'll be like, oh, you like things in your mouth, do you? You know, it's like, well, no, well, maybe, but no. And it's like, does themselves a bad service as well, because it's so unattractive. Like, if any sex was going to happen, it's now not going to happen. So, Yeah, exactly. No one's a winner.
And
no
listen, talk to me about unsolicited pictures of people's penises, which are called dick pics, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in a bar or if you're walking down the street and somebody revealed their penis to you and you didn't want them to, that's a sexual assault, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it seems to be like the, on the dating apps, it's like this Wild West, that this is perfectly okay. But in another way, it's like flashing to me. As someone who's never been on a dating app or never been sent a dick pic, I have to confess that, I find it actually bizarre. And can you sort of talk me through it a little bit? I know I'm sounding like a prude. It's not that I'm a prude. It's just I find it kind of amazing that online this is almost acceptable and just a little sort of annoying thing that sometimes happens rather than something that's a big deal and you call the police about.
Yeah, well, actually, there is like some campaigning at the moment, I think as part of the online harms bill, to make sending dick pics or digital flashing, they call it, a crime. So like you can technically actually report it if you wanted to, but it's kind of murky territory. Obviously, consensual sending of nudes of adults is fine, whatever people want to do in a safe way. But yeah, it is so weirdly normalised. I mean, some of the apps, like on Tinder, you can't actually send photos. So it's like men will try and like drive women to Snapchat or WhatsApp or whatever places that they'll be like, oh, let's, you know, exchange numbers or what's your Snapchat? And I wouldn't say like just so they can do that, but I think there is an element of that with some guys who find it arousing. Because the thing is, I think people are like, why do they think we want to see that? It's like, I don't think they do think about what we want to see. It's to do with like a power, like flashing in public is. It's not to do with like, oh, they'll enjoy this. You know, it's more like, oh, I get a kick out of doing this. And then maybe not even, it's not even that thought through half the time, but the way it's normalized and the way a lot of this stuff is normalized, which it would be, like you say, sexual harassment, sexual assault in person, is something that I and other people are really trying to sort of kind of highlight and, you know, flag, like, this isn't acceptable behavior. This is actually criminal behavior in some cases. So, yeah, I mean, it is a bizarre thing that's become, you know, the subject of jokes, but it's not really funny when you think about it on any kind of level, you know.
Do you think, you know, what you notice, what you've basically written a book about is sexism and misogyny on the online dating apps. Do you think there's a sense of these men, some men on the dating apps, just not really, it's they've dehumanized the women that they're looking at, that they're not actual real life breathing women, that they're just pictures on an app. And so therefore they behave in ways as, you know, that they wouldn't behave to a real woman in the real world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some people on dating apps, and I'm sure this is true of all genders again, but with maybe less nefarious intent, some people than others, is some people on dating apps aren't, I don't think they're really there to date. They're there for lots of different things. Maybe they're lonely and they want to chat, maybe whatever. And I think some guys are there to kind of be titivated, but not in a way that's like leading anywhere or very human. And I sort of talk about, in my book, one of the things I keep coming back to is like, we all deserve someone who sees us as a full human being. And actually a lot of these guys just don't see women as full human beings. They see us as bodies or, you know, disembodied photos, ideas online. But there's definitely the case that people get seen as, yeah, like really dehumanized. It's much easier to objectify someone. It's much easier to kind of reveal your inner misogynist on a dating app, I think, which is a blessing and a curse, I suppose, for women everywhere, because if you can identify it, then you can never meet the man and get on with your life.
You have this superpower of translating Tinder bios. I think you've helped a lot of people with this book. So I want to go into a bit of the translation. Mm-hmm. One of your most recent ones is translating a bio of a guy called Andy from Dublin. So it really caught our eye. and this guy, some of his details on his bio said, magician at Pleasure Academy. Yes, squirting is real. You just haven't met anyone good enough yet. No, you don't need to see my face. You'll be blindfolded and tied down. So maybe it doesn't take too much translation, but what kind of guy do you think Andy from Dublin is, Aileen?
I think the best case scenario is that he is somebody who gets off on these ideas and is never going to carry them out. And the worst case scenario is he actually thinks that there's women who would meet him without ever seeing his face and let him tie them up and do things to them. I mean, I think this really touches on a massive theme, which is a lot of men using kink, which is a really valid form of sexual exploration between consenting adults in a safe environment. And there's loads of communities that do that really well. But men using the kind of language of kink and like tying you up and stuff to just basically be dominant and violent towards women in a way that turns them on, which is not a safe or consensual scenario for the women involved. And I think he's probably one of those guys. I mean, it's sort of almost so comical, that one. It's not like I can't even be outraged by it.
It is, but you also do go into opening lines that some men use on Tinder that I was surprised by, and I'd love you to talk to me about them. Some of them on dating apps say, "Can I pee on you? Can I come over and destroy your pussy? Do you do anal? You look like you give a good blowjob." I mean, do they not know that the majority of women are not going to respond to these things positively? What are they up to?
I think, again, the idea of objectification comes in, because I don't think they're thinking about what we like or how to attract us. You know, I get that a lot on my page. People have been, because of some of the bios are just wild. People will say, like, does he really think that's going to work? I'm like, he's not thought at all, I don't think. I don't see how a reasonable person or even an unreasonable person has gone, how am I going to attract women? I'm going to say this stuff because it's so like beyond what I'd say the vast majority of women find sexy or attractive. And I think that they're not really thinking about necessarily what a woman would want or how to interact with us, again, on a human level. It's more like kind of fishing. Like if you say that to 1,000 women, then maybe one of them will respond in a way you want them to. Or not even that, just saying what you want because you don't, not really thinking about it, and you just think it's fun or funny or an exercise of power, or it turns you on to say that kind of thing to women. And here's like 100 women you can say it to all at once type thing.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Let's go through some of the A to Z of misogyny that he very cleverly laid out. A is an interesting one because it's for just ask. And that's, if you see that in someone's bio, you would see that as a major red flag. Tell us why.
Well, yeah. So some people's bios have literally all they have is just ask. So it's, you know, short for basically just ask me what you want to ask me. I'm not going to write anything here. And I actually think that's worse than writing nothing, because nothing implies that you haven't thought about it and you've just not written anything. Just ask implies that you decided to just say, I'm not going to do any of the work here. If you want to know about me, I'll tell you. I'm not going to say anything about myself. And for me, it's like, it's not a red flag in terms of like, this person's going to be abusive or whatever, but it's like, if you can't even be bothered to write three sentences, if you can't think of three interesting things or one interesting thing to say about yourself, why am I going to put any effort into this conversation? It's establishing from straight at the beginning, you are doing the work and they are just being asked. And, you know, there's just like such a passivity and such a sort of arrogance to it. And Yeah, I hate that so much. It's just one of my massive bugbears. I hate it so much.
Okay, D is for no drama. So why is that something that you should run away from?
Well, I think this one is really heavily gendered, actually, because I think that it's much more women than men that get told that they are dramatic in relationships. And that is because the kinds of emotions that women are socialized to display, like sadness or worry or, you know, trying to communicate about your needs, are often characterized by as dramatic by especially male partners who like can't deal with those needs, don't have the emotional intelligence or literacy to engage with the women. And so it's easier to just say, oh my God, you're so dramatic. So when people say no drama, especially when it's written in all caps, which is the most dramatic of all punctuation, I find that hilarious because it immediately says like, I think you're the drama here, because if your relationships keep being dramatic, I suggest that maybe people are just having normal human emotions and you can't deal with it or you don't want to deal with it. So you just kind of call them dramatic and tap out. And it's also a way of, from the offset, sort of setting a demand that, like, you don't like dramatic women, so, you know, you better not be dramatic, which then makes us kind of mask our emotions, mask our needs, try and, like, be the cool girl for them. And that is a road to unhappiness, basically, I think.
J is for just joking. So this sort of thing of, like, they do something and then you take offense and now it's your problem and it's now you're stuffy or you're not getting the joke. That's a very common one.
Yeah, I think that's really common in dating app exchanges and also just in general in like exchanges with men and women online. If they will kind of test the waters and see if you laugh or not. There's an idea I write about in the book, which I couldn't find the origins of, and I really want to because this person's brilliant, of an idea called Schrodinger's douchebag, which is that basically something is a joke or not, depending on whether the person didn't find it funny. So if I said to you, oh my God, literally all men are awful human beings, and you were like, that's a bit harsh, I'd immediately go, this would be Schrodinger's douchebag. I'd be like, oh my God, it's just a joke. Like, chill out.
Yeah.
But if you said, yeah, they are, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so glad you agree. So right. It's that kind of thing. Or, you know, so when you're pulled up on things, whether it's sexualizing people really quickly or, you know, something bigoted, which, you know, obviously, again, is too common in this world, then it's easy to just say, oh my God, it's just joking. Why can't you take a joke? And flip it back on the other person for being too sensitive or too woke, in inverted commas, or whatever, rather than, you know, take criticism.
Mm. What does it mean? We're going to V for vanilla. What does it mean if someone says they're not looking for anyone vanilla? And is that a warning sign as well?
I think it's a massive warning sign. So in the past, I would say that the term vanilla would have been frigid. So like, in the late 90s when I was a teenager, early noughties, and way before, I think, as well.
Yeah, it was in the 80s when I was growing up as well. Frigid was the worst thing a boy could say to you.
Yeah, so, but with us, I think, I don't know if it's the same for everyone, but certainly for me, frigid usually meant like you wouldn't kiss someone or you wouldn't do other stuff with them, depending on your age, you know, like maybe you wouldn't do like have, like it might mean you wouldn't have sort of penetrative sex with them, but it was generally like to do with like what sex actually would you do. And it was a way of kind of shaming girls who wouldn't, you know, do what boys wanted to do. And then obviously they would also be shamed for being sluts if they did do that. So great times, everybody. But the vanilla thing, which is, you know, kind of used against young women today. So it comes from the BDSM community and it just means like sex that isn't BDSM. So just normal sex. Probably most of the sex that people are having is vanilla sex, in inverted commas. But it's become this like weaponized thing to make young girls again feel sort of shamed if they don't do certain things. But now it's not to do with whether you're going to have sex or not. It's to do with what kind of sex acts you are open to having done to you. And it's actually often it's whether you will be submissive in the bedroom. And again, I put that in inverted commas because it's not BDSM. It's just boys who want to smack or pull hair or degrade or, you know, do have rough sex with girls, regardless of whether it's actually pleasurable for them. And a lot of girls are thinking that if they don't want to do that, they're vanilla, they're boring. And so they kind of think that they have to like things that are actually quite niche and some people do like, but that's like in an adult setting where you've all explored what you like already. So yeah, especially on like platforms like TikTok, the word vanilla is often used to just, yeah, really like degrade and like kind of manipulate young girls who will be in the comments being like, oh my god, I'm not vanilla. It's like, oh baby, be vanilla please.
Exactly, like that's something shameful that, you know, just to,
yeah.
I mean, as you said, it's fine to be into whatever you're into, but if you're not into it, that's also okay as well.
Yeah.
It brings us to K for kinky, because this is the thing as well. I've spoken to a lot of young people recently where they feel very much pressured into doing things when they hook up with a guy, you know, whether it's choking, they're allowing themselves mm-hmm. to be choked or those kind of things, but they're not really wanting to do it. But they feel yeah. like if they don't do it, then it's sort of, they're going to be demeaned. And this is going on in the dating apps as well, where men yeah. are expecting that and very much signalling that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a kind of bin fire of different things, whether it's, you know, the mainstreaming of violent porn is what it really is, the kind of the basic porn you will get on the kind of first page of Pornhub is rough sex, you know, at least hair pulling, spanking, kind of, it's not even submissive really, it's just kind of violent from the men and sort of just passive from the women, or pretending they like it because porn actresses are actresses, which a lot of young people don't realise. And that, but also kind of 50 Shades of Grey, which is just like, not the BDSM community. I hate that. I have it on good authority. So it's become this thing that's almost kind of standard part of sex. And people are being told that that's like, that's their introduction. That's how you start. And I think a lot of girls do feel pressured in. And I also feel like a lot of young boys, and it's, you know, not as physically risky for them because things like choking are incredibly dangerous. Even if not the risk of death, the risk of brain damage, all these kinds of things. But even young boys who aren't necessarily, heterosexual boys aren't necessarily at such a risk. They don't get to explore what they might like in the bedroom either. It's like, this is what sex is like. It's very sad for all parties, but it's kind of dangerous for girls. And it's also something that they seem to get more shamed for online and, you know, by people. It's things that are expected of them that are quite dangerous. And then there are some guys who think that like all girls like to be choked now, and you'll see female comics doing stand up about it and stuff. And it's like, you know, I probably used to laugh at that stuff until I kind of learned more about how dangerous it is. And like, you know, even people who are really experienced and do courses, you know, don't actually choke each other in bed. That's not actually what that is. It's never been that. So it's just terrifying really. The whole thing, the more you look into it, it's a bit bleak really. But I think by writing books like this and having conversations like this, hopefully like more and more young women are hearing that that is just not what sex has to be.
I mean, it is a bit bleak, and probably this is a time to say, like, I'm reading your book, I have 2 13-year-old daughters, I'm like, oh my God, I can't bear them to ever go anywhere near one of these dating apps that you've just written a book about, full of misogyny. Yeah. But I suppose why you wrote the book was because you went on the apps, you saw all this stuff, and you wanted to help other women, kind of in a funny way too, because there's a lot of laughs to be had in the book too.
Yeah.
And in this subject. But you kind of wanted to say, look, it's a minefield, but here's how to get through it without having a mine explode in your face. Mm-hmm. But can you tell me, is it all like this, or is there any, is there good parts of the internet dating from your experience?
No, it's not all like this. And, you know, yeah, very much I kind of try and signpost at various points in the book that, like, I'm talking about the misogynists, I'm talking about the kind of things that we need to avoid. And I'm also using it as a jumping off point to talk about misogyny in relationships and just in society in general, because I think it's a really, like, interesting microcosm to, like, look at. But I mean, I have a partner, a long-term partner that I met on a dating app. I'm loath to admit it, but there you go. But no, and I don't make that a massive part of my work because I don't want it to be like the happy ending, like when I found a man now, you know, that, because the happy ending was me realizing that I would like a man, but whatever, you know, and kind of navigating my way through these things and making sure that my anchor was always my self-esteem and my self-worth, and not sort of bending to the, you know, whatever kind of wind that was blowing from different men who I wanted to like me. But, you know, it's not all like this. And some people will look at my page and they'll be like, oh, sometimes I think I'm going to download the apps again. And then I see your page and I'm like, oh, never. But I'm getting sent all the worst bios from all around the world, Dublin, you know, Melbourne, you know, like San Francisco, like wherever you might be, there are these bios. And it is a big part of it. Like, it is a big part of it. And that's something that, again, we could kind of, like, if we're prepared, you can kind of just get through those bits quite easily. You're not trying to engage, you're not trying to say, like, you know, tell men off, you just block, let's go, you're right, not you, you know. Or you're not trying to excuse behaviors because it's become normalized. But those things are things that we, because this is so new, it's only 10 years old. So many people like me are getting out of long-term relationships and going back onto dating, and that's what you do now, that we don't have that kind of, like, we're not equipped in that way to approach it in a sort of way that's, like, keeping us safe and just keeping it fun. But I mean, I started the account because it's not always fun, and actually translating these bios, which were all mine at first, because every time I went onto the apps, I could find two or three, was kind of a cathartic way to kind of make fun of it. And, you know, many a truth is told in jest and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. And I think young people, although there are a lot of pressures on them that we didn't maybe have, they also have a lot more language and a lot more access to good education about these things. So I have a son who's 9, and it all is a bit terrifying to me at the moment as well, with all the kind of online misogyny and stuff. I'm just, like, watching everything he's looking at, like, nope, not you. You will not be one of these men. but it's, you know, there is a lot of good stuff out there, and there are some good guys out there. It's true.
That's great news, Aileen. There was a review of your book in The Australian, I think, and the reviewer was not very happy with you, called it a 200-page swipe at single men, and said that the Tinder translator is to encourage women to reject disrespectful behaviour from men when dating online, but the result is an awful, grinding, feminist own goal. He really didn't like your book. Do you think he took it a bit personally?
It was written by a woman.
Oh, see, that's terrible. I assumed it was a man.
I mean, it's a very, I think, I don't know what's happening in that review, because at one point she quotes what I think is a really lovely bit of my book, where I talk about how I'm talking about not taking "you're not like other girls" as a compliment, because actually other girls are bloody amazing and women are amazing. And so there's this kind of gushing quote about how, like, all of the people who built me and all of the art I love, almost all of it is from women. And then she's kind of goes, "What, women like Rosemary West? Women like Ghislaine Maxwell?" And I'm
my gosh.
I'm sorry, what? It's just, it's like very, like, I'm like, no, oh, you caught me. I'm a big Maxwell fan, you know, like, no, I don't mean those particular women. So it's a kind of quite a bizarre review. And I did think it was by a man at first, but it's not. So I don't know. I think that some people, I suppose it depends the spirit you're reading it in, that there is a lot of dry humour. And there is, actually, I think, quite a lot of warmth in the book, because I really care about women and our experiences and keeping us safe and happy. And I think every woman who has self-worth and like lives in that truth is a better every person, actually. It's regardless of gender, but I suppose I'm focusing on women who date heterosexual men, so they're in this kind of patriarchal relationship, even in their intimate relationships. You know, I think it's just so important that we talk about all this stuff and unmask it. I think it's kind of like a warm book in a way, although it's cuttingly sarcastic a lot of the time. But I think some people can take it I don't want to say too seriously, because it is serious in some places, but I don't know, with humorlessly is maybe the right word. But yeah,
let's talk about another couple of your A to Z. M is for married, because there's a lot of married men on those dating apps and are kind of open about it. It's kind of interesting. What's that all about? And they're not afraid of getting caught.
Well, a lot of them don't put pictures on. So I think a lot of them, some do, and that's bizarre to me, because they'll be like, and then they'll say in their bio that they're married. And I'm like, do you think your wife doesn't have friends? Like, what? Single friends. And maybe that's what they're banking on. I don't know. Or maybe they're in different parts of the UK or whatever. So there's kind of like a few different genres of married man on dating apps. One is the guy who will be like, think it's sexy, let's meet for some no strings fun. And it's like, that's not sexy, dude. If you're not having fun with your wife, why would I want to, not that I would want to have fun if you were having fun with your wife, but you know what I mean? And then there's another type of guy who will just be like, you know, don't judge me in a sexless, loveless marriage. It's usually sexless, actually. I don't think they care about the love bit. just looking to get my needs met, but I'm staying for the kids. It's like, oh my God, what a hero. Like, oh my God, well done, mate. Like, oh, do you know what? What a good guy that you're, you know, just trying to cheat on your wife on dating apps because of the kids, for the kids. And then there are lots that don't say as well. And I don't think I was like quite savvy to them when I started online dating. I wasn't cynical enough in a way to kind of think. There are a few guys now that I was in conversations with, and even like a couple that I met up with that I think now maybe they were in, like looking at the warning signs, they were in maybe in long-term relationships, and kind of, you know, because they were a bit erratic with me and a bit like didn't always message me back, or they'd message me back late at night, or because there's all these signs, you know, maybe someone's in a relationship, whether it's you never go back to their house, whether it's, you know, they say that they've got a complicated relationship with their mother of their children, or they only message you in working hours, or only message you really late at night. There are some signs to kind of like, you know, there can be explanations for these things, but it's worth looking out for. And I kind of go through those a bit in that chapter as well, because it's something maybe I was a bit naive about, which is ironic because my marriage ended with an affair, so I don't know why. I was like, oh no, married men don't do this. Not a dating app affair, though, to be fair. So
I'm curious, Aileen, about when you saw your partner's bio on these dating apps. Presumably there was nothing in that gave you any concern.
No. I think I probably teased him about some things, but it's really funny. Actually, I asked recently on my page, like, what do you look for in like photos of guys? And so many people said a kind face or kind eyes. And that was definitely something that my partner has, a very kind face. And that was nice. But yeah, I think we both have children, and he kind of briefly mentioned that, but didn't make a like, my kids are my world. Like, you know, just sort of said, I've got a daughter and I take that quite seriously. Everything else, not so much, or something like that. He said that he was a lefty. So I was like, great, this sounds all right. But I think we just had like good chat from the get-go. And the thing about running my page, I mean, when we met, I probably had, I don't know, less than 2,000 followers or something. I'm not sure how many followers I had, but it was like quite a small page at that time. I would send it to guys that I was talking to. I'd be like, this, I do this thing. And, you know, that's instantly whether they can love it or not is like a yes or no for me. And a lot of my friends have done it as well. They've been like, oh, my friend runs this page, like, have a look at that. And if they can't sort of at least be like, oh, my God, like, what are these bios about? Or like, oh, sound, you know, then they're kind of like, if they kind of try and defend the guys with the awful, the magician at Pleasure Academy, you know, then it's like, right, well, no, thanks. But yeah, so that was always a good litmus test when I was dating. I recommend it. Anyone can use it.
Excellent. So before you go, would you just, for people who are listening to this now, who maybe haven't been on the apps or have daughters who are going on, mm-hmm. So obviously a lot of people listening will know, will be relating to everything you're saying, but what is the kind of, to sum it up, what should people be, have their antennae up for, you know, and to guard themselves against overall in terms of the dating apps?
Well, I think a really solid start is to go on there with a sense of what it is you want. And it can, that doesn't matter what it is, whether it's like, I just want to go on some dates and I'm not that bothered, or I just want to have sex with people, but, you know, in a respectful way, or I want a long-term relationship. And then sort of like engaging with the people who want the same thing as you. I think one thing is to, it gets really easy to dismiss your feelings of discomfort because there are so many men who will push boundaries, is to just be like, right, if someone's making me feel uncomfortable, I'm not going to talk to them anymore. And, you know, just have that as a really hard boundary for yourself, because you don't owe these people anything. And very rarely does someone make you feel uncomfortable once and then it turns out that you're going to get married and live happily ever after, or even have a nice date, you know. So really, like, check in with yourself and be like, oh, you know, I thought that was a bit off. I mean, if something's a bit off, you could say it. And then if they get defensive, which they almost certainly will, then, you know, just, you can just end the conversation. I don't think this is going to work out for me. And the thing is, you also need to have a bit of resilience, because most women I know who will say to men, actually, having talked to you, I don't think we're on the same page, politely saying no, thank you, we'll get abuse back. I didn't want to, like, you're ugly anyway, or whatever, you know, all this stuff. It's like, and just to kind of go, right, bin that. But I think going with your gut, and also just like having an awareness of what you want, and having an awareness of whether someone is interested in you as a full human being. Are they asking you questions about yourself? Are you doing all the work in the conversation? You know, do you feel like someone's interested in you? And if the answer is no, for me, that's really unattractive. But it's also the case of a lot of these conversations. So I guess it's about being selective and trusting your gut, and having enough self-worth to kind of want what you would want for your friends, for yourself, I suppose. And, you know, read my book. That'll help.
Well, it definitely will. I mean, the page has evolved over the years. It's not just translating Tinder profiles. It's definitely a commentary on modern misogyny and feminism and how women navigate the world. So what is next for you? Are you working on anything else? Are you stuck in your Tinder translator lane, or has this widened your horizons?
I hope not. I mean, obviously, Tinder translator has given me a kind of new career path, really. But yeah, there's so much more that I talk about, as you say, on my page, to kind of respond to. There's so much online misogyny, so there's a lot to unpack there. I don't have another book project coming up yet, but I am... I've got about 5 ideas. But I am working on a few bits and bobs, and I'm actually off to Australia in May, because that's where my publishers is. So I'm finally going to meet people, and I've got quite a big following there. So I'm going to do some events and things like that. But mostly at the moment, I'm working on just like looking at what's next, and I'm trying to engage and educate people about kind of online misogyny and the kind of, you know, the Andrew Tates of the world, but, you know, he's just one. And also just make women laugh in a world that sometimes is a bit much. So, it's all a bit up in the air at the moment. I'm still very much kind of in the Tinder translator zone, but it's definitely not going to be where I stay forever.
You mentioned the word bleak just finally. I mean... Mm-hmm. Can you leave us on a more uplifting note? Because I do think the book is quite depressing. And I think online discourse a lot of the time seems to be quite depressing in terms of, as I said, I haven't been on one, but I hear from friends. But I suppose to leave it on the fact that people do meet people still online, and that there are, but also people still meet people in real life as well, I suppose.
You know, and that it's not, we've been taught, especially as women, to like center romantic relationships as the be all and end all, as the thing that's like the happy ending. And anyone who's in a long-term relationship knows that a good relationship is great, but it's not a happy ending. It's a part of your life, a healthy one anyway. It shouldn't be, you know, all consuming. And I think that my positive really is the way that the community that's been built around my page, and the way that I see women and people of all genders supporting each other. And, you know, although there is this kind of dark side to online dating, dark side to the internet, there's also this amazing side, which is the solidarity that's built, people not feeling alone because they find other people to talk to, especially if you're single and all your friends are in relationships and they're like, oh, it can't be that bad, you know, finding other people online to talk to, and, you know, sort of building a resilience as a community, and sort of saying, actually, no, we're not going to stand for this anymore. And I think actually a lot of what the kind of online misogyny stuff is a reaction to a lot of women actually saying, no, I'm not standing for this anymore. So in a way it's like, ha, you get angry, boys, but we're doing all right. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Well, thank you for ending it on a lovely positive note about community and solidarity, and I suppose women supporting each other, and like you say, people of all genders, because I like to think that most people are good, really. And a lot of the time we focus on the bad apples in the barrel. But the book is great, and I think it's definitely something that everyone who's embarking on that world should read, so that they are armed very well. And don't waste their time with people who are not worth your time. But thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That was Aileen Barrett there, and her book is Tinder Translator, which is an A to Z of modern misogyny. And it is bleak, but it's also a very, very funny book, and I would recommend you read. And I'm going to press it into the hands of many young women in my life too. That's it for me. The podcast is produced by Suzanne Brennan, Aideen Finnegan, and by me, Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. Mind yourselves, and I will talk to you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.